From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, this is your SDPB News Podcast. I'm Josh Chilson in Sioux Falls. Southeast Tech breaks ground on a major manufacturing education project. Jackson Dirks reports.
On a windy morning in Sioux Falls, state dignitaries have golden shovels in hand. They prepare to plunge them in a pile of dirt. And with that, ground for the James Abner Center for Advanced Manufacturing is symbolically broken. It'll support programs including advanced manufacturing maintenance technology, automation technology, and mechanical engineering tech and welding. The project increases capacity to more than 100 additional students each year. It's named after a former U.S. senator and mentor to the current Senate Majority Leader. John Thune is grateful this project is a legacy to Abner.
Because he cared so much, he had such a passion for young people, and he had such a passion for South Dakota, and you put those two together right here, and that's preparing young people and setting them up for success in the workplace. And I'm a product of that. I wouldn't be where I am without Jim Abner. There's no absolute question about that. He took an interest in me.
The $18 million project received boosts from federal, state, local, and private investments. That includes a $6 billion appropriation from the state legislature. For Governor Larry Rodin, who included funds in his budget proposal last year, it represents the state finding ways to support all types of education.
You know, when early in my career, I used to kind of tilt my head a little bit because we kind of had the attitude that we had to push every high school senior toward a four-year college degree, a traditional four-year college degree. And in recent years, we've struck a balance. You know, the trades have become more and more of a draw as far as what they provide as in the way of opportunities for our young people.
The new facility is set to open in fall 2028. I'm SDPB's Jackson Dirks.
A new phase of a major road construction project on I-90 north of Rapid City begins today. The Department of Transportation says road closures are scheduled on the interstate between exits 44 and 48 near Piedmont. Traffic is down to a single lane in each direction. The speed limit is reduced to 65 miles per hour. Officials expect the closures to remain in place through November. It's part of the larger Exit 46 reconstruction project, which has an overall completion date of December 2028. South Dakota U.S. Senator John Thune says he believes elections are breaking Republicans' way ahead of the midterms. Though, as Jackson Dirks reports, it's not without challenges for the party.
Republicans are at risk of losing majorities in Congress. It comes at a time with the economy and affordability at the forefront, especially surrounding gas prices. They've gone up following the closing of the Strait of Hormuz. That's a result of the Iran war. U.S. Senator John Thune says the singular focus of the White House has got to be ensuring the Strait opens and that the U.S. economy is not suffering due to it. It's something he hopes happens before midterms in November.
There are challenges ahead, but I feel like they're on a path toward landing something that will at least get things moving again and hopefully provide lessen some of the pressure on fuel prices here at home.
President Donald Trump has been critical of both Senator Thune and Republicans to some degree. Trump's especially grown frustrated with the filibuster, calling for the Senate to terminate it. Thune's opposed that idea. He's pushed the idea of unifying Republicans ahead of November. Thune believes that message to unify the party ahead of midterms is getting through to some degree.
If you want to have a Senate majority after November, the best way to do that is not to have us, you know, turning fire on each other, but drawing contrast with Democrats, and there are plenty to draw.
In his view, there's a clear division between the parties about the future of the United States.
Look at Michigan, look at Minnesota, look at some of these states where you've got these far-left radical Democrats winning elections, or winning primaries at least, and so I think that represents a great opportunity to contrast with them in the fall, and that's where we ought to be focused.
Thune told reporters that things are breaking Republicans' way with farther-left candidates winning in states like Michigan and Minnesota. In South Dakota, there's two midterm elections, the state's lone seat in the U.S. House and one of the state's Senate seats. I'm SDPB's Jackson Dirks.
A bat at Jewel Cave National Monument has tested positive for rabies. The live bat was collected along the historic lantern tour route last month by trained personnel. No human contact with the bat has been reported. Rabies is a deadly viral disease, but can be treated with prompt medical care following potential exposure. Humans contract rabies through exposure to a rabid animal, typically through a bite, scratch, or contact with saliva. Any direct contact with a bat is considered potential rabies exposure because bites and scratches from a bat are difficult to detect. Jewel Cave staff are collaborating with the State Department of Health and the National Park Service to ensure public safety. Within the next decade, older adults could outnumber children in South Dakota and across the U.S. for the first time. At the same time, senior care advocates say caregiving declines and Medicaid cuts could leave many older adults with limited options when they need long-term care. Ellison Barkoff is with the Hirsch Health Law and Policy Program at George Washington University. She says more than 11,000 Americans are turning 65 each day, and they're living longer, many past 80 years of age.
We know that the vast majority of people are going to need long-term care in their lifetime, more than 70%. And the older people are, the more likely they are to have more significant long-term support needs.
This comes as the One Big Beautiful Bill Spending Act is set to slash nearly $1 trillion for Medicaid over the next decade. Meantime, a recent analysis by AARP found South Dakota ranked 36th among all states in addressing the needs of aging seniors. As flock-type cameras, those are cameras that take images of license plates, garner more public pushback, South Dakota is looking at guardrails around the technology. Attorney General Marty Jackley is looking at legislation to potentially regulate these cameras. Lori Walsh spoke with Jackley.
I think when you look at this, everybody in South Dakota doesn't want Big Brother looking at what they're doing. And yet people in South Dakota recognize that there can be a serious kidnapping, human trafficking, murder, where law enforcement needs the tools to go, you know, save a little kid. And we have that example. I know a lot of the discussion is that this is a new thing. This has been around a long time. Back in 2023, these cameras were used in Clark County to recover a 9-year-old little girl that was kidnapped, and she was found safe. And that's a direct, you know, positive use of these cameras. In the McKenna Wendell case just recently, where McKenna was, taken and unfortunately murdered and found in a creek by Brookings, these cameras were used to build the case and bring the particular case against the suspect. So there's a value to them. But my belief is that we need to make sure there's safeguards in place, that these should only be used for serious matters. And in South Dakota, they are. I mean, they're not allowed to be used for speeding tickets. They're not allowed to be just randomly tracking. But I think putting those guardrails in legislation makes sense. Simple guardrails that they have to be used for legitimate, serious investigative matters. And I think there needs to be privacy protections. We do it all the time with destruction of records laws, you know, require the destruction of this data within an established period of time, unless there's an ongoing investigation. Obviously, if there's an ongoing investigation, that information needs to be saved, given to the defendant in discovery. But I think we could put some very common sense guardrails in that they're essentially being done now, but because these cameras can go up in 66 different counties, we just want to make sure it's a uniform policy, have the law enforcement and legislative input. I've already begun discussions with a lot of sheriffs and chiefs. I talked to state's attorneys. I'm working with legislators to come up with the right balance so that we can save that 9-year-old little kidnapped girl, but yet we don't have a data breach situation or we don't have any inappropriate use of this, and that we're only using it for serious matters. That this isn't a system that should be used for tracking. You know, at this point, about every state in the nation is dealing with it. And I just want to make sure we're not the wild, wild west, that we have rules in place to protect the public and to use this technology to ultimately protect the public without causing privacy breaches.
So when you say most serious matters, do you mean felony warrants only?
Well, they wouldn't necessarily be used for warrants. Example is the Clark County case, where the call for service comes in and we have a 9-year-old missing girl. We don't have a warrant at that point. You know, we have some basic information, but to use that technology with the information we have to recover that little girl. So I'm saying it wouldn't be used for low-level crimes, certainly wouldn't be used for speeding tickets. But if you have a kidnapping, a human trafficking, a murder, an attempted murder, maybe a very serious aggravated assault, those type of things, I feel the public wants us to use that technology to apprehend the suspect and to ultimately save that victim that may be human trafficked or kidnapped, but doing it in a responsible way and doing it that we protect the data so that, you know, we're not spying on people or using it inappropriately. I've had very good conversations with law enforcement. It's been well received by legislators. We just need to figure out what are the proper safeguards and get those put in place so that we don't have happen what's happened in some other states where there are abuses there.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, there hasn't been brought to my attention as Attorney General a single abuse of these systems.
The state can make their legislation, which we haven't done yet, but we're getting ahead of, as if I understand you correctly.
Yes.
Then what about the federal government? If they want to do immigration enforcement and they want to tap into that data or ask the state for information or use those in a way that, you know, South Dakotans maybe have not agreed to, how does that work?
I think the practicalities of it, that would generally require a court order. So I don't, if the state weren't agreeable to it, it wouldn't likely happen unless a federal court ordered it. And that really goes into the key component of a destruction of records policy. You know, even if there would be a subpoena or a court order granted for certain records, the only records that would be available would be those that are kept during the retention period.
Any potential legislation would need to be brought by the next Attorney General, which is almost certainly set to be Lance Russell, who's running unopposed. That's your daily news update. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at SDPB News. And stay up to date on the latest headlines at sdpb.org/news. Thank you for following listener-supported SDPB.